This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Monday, May 17th. I'm Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Peace activists rallied in Denver at the state capitol to call for an end to the Israeli government's bombing of Gaza and the forced displacement of Palestinians in the occupied territories. We'll get an update about what's new at Boulder City Hall with reporter Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. The Boulder police officer killed during the King Soopers mass shooting received a posthumous Medal of Honor. And Miriam Schiff shares a preview of this afternoon's Metro show airing at 3 p.m. when she interviews Bryce Springfield about resilience, self-determination, and perseverance. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines. And then it's Black Talk with Professor Michelle Simpson. Today's show features interviews with three members of Boulder High School's Black Student Alliance. Then comes Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, a look at headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
As of yesterday, businesses in the six Metro Denver counties now have the option to operate the way they did before the pandemic. Adams, Arapahoe, Boulder, Broomfield, Denver, and Jefferson counties all moved to level clear on the state's COVID-19 dial, meaning they can be open at 100% capacity and not require face coverings. On Friday, Governor Jared Polis announced the effective end of the statewide mask mandate. The governor said that the state has reached a threshold where there are not enough people vaccinated to call an end to the pandemic, but enough people have received shots so that they no longer need to wear masks. Mask wearing is still encouraged for people who haven't received shots and will continue to be required through at least June 1st for unvaccinated people in assisted living facilities, emergency medical settings, child care facilities, and jails and prisons. After that date, events with over 500 people will no longer need state approval to take place. People who are vaccinated should still carry masks with them. Some business owners are not yet ready to drop the mask requirement, whether someone is vaccinated or not. Establishments may keep asking customers to wear masks because they don't have the resources or ability to verify someone's vaccine status. The move by Metro counties to level clear on the state's COVID-19 dial comes as the virus continues to tear through Colorado at levels rarely seen before the pandemic. On Sunday, Colorado sat atop a New York Times tracker for the national hotspots, recording the worst 7-day average rate for new coronavirus cases in the nation. The state rose to the top spot on Friday. The Colorado Sun reports that measurements of how well the virus is under control in the state are near the lowest they've been since the start of the pandemic. An estimated 1 out of every 81 people in the state is currently contagious with the virus. In March, that number was 1 out of every 350 people. The most recent modeling projections produced by health experts at several Colorado universities estimate more virus will be in circulation this coming summer than last summer, and the virus that is circulating will be predominantly from more infectious variants. Those making the modeling projections have said that if the state relaxes restrictions now, more people will die from the virus by the end of July than if it kept restrictions in place for a little while longer. While there may be some breakthrough infections, meaning positive tests for those who have been vaccinated, according to a spokesperson for the state health department, the greatest risk is to those who are not vaccinated or are still in the process of reaching full immunization. Employers in the state with more than 100 workers may have to start charging their employees for parking. Colorado's Air Pollution Control Division wants those larger businesses to provide shuttles for transit stops and allow more working from home. The Colorado Sun reports that the proposed measures would apply to the state's high ozone areas and seeks to limit the number of workers commuting alone in cars to 3/4 of a company's workforce starting next year. That limit would then lower to 60% of an employer's workforce by 2024. Large employers would also have to appoint an official transportation coordinator and eliminate parking subsidies or start charging for currently free parking under the rule proposal. It's not clear from the draft rules what enforcement mechanisms state government will have to encourage large companies to come under the limits. Environmental groups said the rules look promising, but they want to hear more about how they'll be enforced. Agency staff are asking the commission to set hearings and a vote on the new transportation rules by late summer. A bill that, if passed, would create a state office designed to curb gun violence advanced at the State House of Representatives on Friday. Colorado Politics reports that the measure is the second of three introduced since the mass shooting in a Boulder King Superstore in March. The bill seeks to create an Office of Gun Violence Prevention that would operate a clearinghouse to compile data to help with decisions and strategies. It could also award grants to organizations that seek to implement gun violence prevention measures. Over the objections of the chamber's Republicans, the bill now moves to a vote of the full House, which has already given its preliminary approval to a measure that would bar those with violent misdemeanor convictions from buying guns. The organization calling itself Bedrooms Are for People has announced that it has collected enough signatures to place a measure about Boulder housing limits on the November ballot. The group seeks to change the city's zoning laws that prohibit more than three unrelated people from living together in most homes in Boulder, no matter how large a house is. The initiative would expand access to housing by allowing units to be occupied by people equal to the number of bedrooms plus one per home. In a release, the group says that once the city of Boulder certifies the petition in June, its initiative would become the first in the nation to secure municipal ballot access via an online petitioning system. Showers and thunderstorms are likely today and tomorrow, with highs in the region about 60 to 65 both days. Right now it's about 52 in Boulder and a bit warmer in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Peace activists rallied at the state capitol in Denver Friday, calling for an end to the Israeli government's bombing of Gaza and the forced displacement of Palestinians in the occupied territories. Organizers of the event included the Colorado Palestine Club, Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition, and Jewish Voices for Peace, among others. Israel is by far the largest recipient of U.S. military aid, consistently set at over $3 billion a year. In 2016, the Trump administration entered into a 10-year agreement with the government of Israel to provide $38 billion of U.S. military aid up through fiscal year 2028. That agreement is subject to congressional appropriation. Now peace activists are calling on Congress to condition those funds on compliance with human rights norms and international law. KGNU's Dave Ashton covered the rally at the state capitol and sends this excerpt of a speech by Rima Wadan of the Colorado Palestine Club.
I want to start off by saying I am a proud, unapologetic Palestinian. I want to thank you for standing with our community today. I want to thank you for standing with our community for 70 years of illegal Israeli military occupation. Thank you for rising up above the propaganda, and thank you for standing up for the truth. And most importantly, thank you for standing with your oppressed brothers and sisters in Palestine. For over four decades now, I have stood on these Capitol steps with my family denouncing illegal military occupation in Palestine. We have been demanding an end to illegal Israeli military occupation of Palestine. And here, we all stand together because we are asking the international community to end the siege on Gaza. We are asking the international community to end the apartheid in Palestine, and we are asking the international community to end illegal theft of Palestinian land. What you are witnessing, ladies and gentlemen, is nothing short of genocide and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. That is what you are seeing. And that is what is happening today. The people in Sheikh Jarrah, a neighborhood in East Jerusalem, have illegal settlers forcibly forcing. They are going into Palestinian homes and asking them to remove themselves from the house. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine somebody coming into your house and asking you to get out of your own house? And then we're going to say, oh, well, I'm going to call the police because this is my house. You call the police and the police says, yes, you got to leave your house. Does that make sense to you guys? Does it make sense then to take this case to an international court or to the Supreme Court to argue why my house has been illegally taken by an illegal Israeli settler? Does that make sense to you? So why is Israel calling it a real estate dispute? Is this a real estate dispute? It is illegal theft of Palestinian land, and we, as Palestinians, will not stand for it anymore. You witnessed the Israeli military police barging into Al-Aqsa Mosque during one of the holiest months in Ramadan. They barged in, shooting, using tear gas, killing people while Palestinians were unarmed and peacefully praying. This is what was happening in the holiest month of Ramadan. Settlers were burning the trees around our masjid. This is not acceptable. It's an illegal international war crime, and Israel's complicit in this. So when our leaders in the Palestinian Authority want to go to the international court and actually report Israel for committing international crimes, do you know what they were said by the Israeli government? Your visa is denied. You cannot go to the international court to report crimes against your own people. Where do we see this in anywhere in the world? This is completely unjust. You are witnessing fathers, our fathers, being beaten and detained. You are witnessing our young men being killed and executed. They attempt to humiliate our women, and they also have no mercy on our elderly or our children. We are casualty to them. We are human race. We are allowed to defend ourselves. But what with military, I would ask you, with our stones, you're going to come up with the most sophisticated military in the world against stones. This is what the Palestinians are continuously going through. You are witnessing an oppressor commit war crimes against those who are oppressed. One side with all the power, including $3.8 billion of all your tax money. We can take that $3.8 billion and put it in our education system. We can take that $3.8 billion and put it into the homeless situation. We can put the $3.8 billion and educate our kids, allow our teachers to have a salary. This is where that $3.8 billion. So I urge all of you guys to tell your representatives where this money can be best used. The Palestinians need you to know that we are a resilient people. All we want is freedom and liberation. We want to live with dignity, and we want justice for all. All universal values and principles that we all deserve. The world is watching Israel have their knee on our necks for over 73 years, and this is not going to be tolerated. I want you to rise up, speak up, and let's hold Israel accountable. Can we say that? Let's hold Israel accountable. Let's hold Israel accountable.
Let's hold Israel accountable.
With our millions and our billions.
With our millions and our billions.
We are all Palestinians.
We are all Palestinians.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Long live Palestine.
Long live Palestine.
From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
Palestine will be free.
It's the Monday before a regular Boulder City Council meeting, and KGNU's Roz Brown checks in with journalist Shay Castle, the owner and publisher of Boulder Beat News, on what to expect tomorrow night.
Good morning, Shay. So it looks like a public hearing and discussion about whether Boulder should form a library district funded through a tax collected from property owners in the entity's boundaries as a way to alleviate strain on the city budget is on the agenda for tomorrow night. Can you please frame that issue for our listeners?
So for several years now, a group of, former library board members, library commissioners and trustees kind of have been pushing for a library district, which is like a special district like RTD. You know, RTD doesn't necessarily belong to, you know, like the state government or Boulder County or anything. A bunch of a geographic area pays a certain tax to this special district, and that funds RTD. The library district would be the same. It would be a district slightly larger than Boulder, because a significant number of the library's users don't live in the city of Boulder, and they would pay a property tax to fund the library. As of now, the library is under the city's control. It's primarily funded through sales tax, which, as people may know, has been a wildly fluctuating source of revenue. It's been slowing. The growth of sales tax has been slowing the last several years as the population ages and shrinks. So it's not the most stable source. And also the city has a huge amount of discretion of where it spends its money. And it, at least the library district proponents say, they don't always prioritize the library, which has led to a big backlog, like deferred maintenance and, you know, some expansion they'd like to do to like Gun Barrel and Niwot that has been on tap for decades that has just not happened because the funds aren't there.
This has been discussed previously by city councils over the years, but it's never moved forward. Do you think there's an appetite for it this time around?
You know, it's really hard for me to say what the council appetite is for this. This council has touched on it a little bit, and I think given the last couple of times they have, skepticism has still really persisted. They have asked a ton of questions. They've gotten really in the weeds on how, you know, a district is run and governed and how they share assets. And that's been their primary objection, is that they don't want to kind of cede control over the library. Of course, the city of Boulder would still own all of the things. They don't have to give them to the new district. They could kind of like rent them out, lease them out. So the city could still retain ownership of everything that it loves about the library. But I think there's a real hesitancy to kind of let that go. And then, of course, there's the perennial concerns about, you know, will the taxpayers tax themselves a tiny bit more? The proponents of a district actually argue it's a little bit less because we'll be sharing the cost with people who don't live in the city of Boulder. But it still is a new tax, and that always comes with its risk.
The library reached a huge milestone in 2018 with more than 1 million visitors to the system. So while its popularity continues to grow, the funding and the staff have not grown over the years. We also have the future of the MARPA House on University Hill on the consent agenda. Do you anticipate any further discussion on that?
Yes. So last time council voted to move ahead with the reuse of the MARPA House. However, the final language of, you know, the agreement that the developers are and the eventual operators of that property, the eventual agreement that they have to abide by, there were still some details to be worked out about quiet hours and so forth. So the final full agreement is coming up for council. It's scheduled on the consent agenda, which normally they don't discuss, but I do see they've set aside about 30 minutes to discuss it. I would not expect that vote outcome to change. So if people are hoping like there's a last-ditch effort to reverse that council vote, I would be quite surprised if that would happen. It's just mostly finessing the details that they already agreed upon at the last meeting.
And after council's study session last week regarding homeless encampments, that is also on the consent agenda, which is about new rules to discourage encampments in public places, namely banning tents and propane tanks. Is that pretty much cut and dried?
Well, I don't know if it'll take any time. It'll probably be another one of those quick, they already said how they felt things. But I know there is a lot of interest in the adjustment to base, which is a budget proceeding. It also doesn't have any time scheduled for discussion, but it's controversial because that's where the $2.7 million in new appropriations are going to be allocated to additional enforcement of removing encampments of unhoused folks. So again, there's not going to be a change. I know people watching might hope council members would change their mind, and that's incredibly unlikely. But it is happening at this meeting, so if folks wanted to come to open comment and comment on it, that would be the time.
Thank you, Shay. We'll talk again in a couple weeks. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
You can find more of Shay Castle's work at boulderbeat.news. The Boulder police officer killed in the mass shooting at King Soopers received a posthumous Medal of Honor Friday. KGNU's Rosanna Longo was there.
My name is Paul, one of the chaplains for the Boulder Police Department, and there's five of us that volunteer, and we just took a moment today to remember the lives, the sacrifice of seven slain officers over the history of the Boulder Police Department. And it was just a really nice gathering, meaningful gathering.
This gathering, especially today, is one that will stay with us because of the sacrifice, Officer Tully. Your blessing was really profound.
You know, and one thing I mentioned in my invocation is just the command in the scripture to remember. You know, quite often throughout, whether it be the Old Testament, the New Testament, we're often called to remember. And I prayed that today because there's something very powerful as we remember. The ancient Israelites were called to remember their deliverance from Egypt as slaves. Jesus, you know, used the symbols of bread and wine to remember what he had done, his body being broken. It just, it connects us to the price that people have paid. And so today we remembered again, you know, remembered the sacrifice of Eric Talley and others. And it's powerful that we are not here by just good luck and chance, but we're here because people have paid a very heavy price.
We're protected by others, and we have, all of us, we have a duty here in this world. How do you see the rain today? Is this a symbolic way of Boulder also crying out for those that have given away their lives out of duty of protecting others?
Yeah, as the rain came, I found myself praying that it would hold off. and then I realized, you know, rain can feel a bit gloomy in the present when it's happening, but without the rain, there is no new life. And so I realized this is actually very fitting that, you know, I believe the Lord allowed it to rain today, just as a reminder that it may feel gloomy a bit. We're not that far away from the shooting. It's still very disturbing to so many of us, but the rain reminds us, you know, that there is new life coming. There's hope for us. We're here. We were protected by brave men and women, and the rain is just a good reminder that there's hope.
Paul Durbin, many people have said that with this situation in Boulder, it's an awakening for all of us to unite, to wake up, and to do the changes that are necessary for our kids and the kids of our kids.
That's right, and that goes to what I prayed in the benediction, that this occasion was not just to remember, but it's also to gather up our resolve to move forward. And like you said, to not be so divided. I'm so grieved by our nation, how divided we are, and how much could we accomplish if we set aside our differences, come together, and have a resolve, you know, to remind people of the hope that we have.
Last message for the family of Officer Tully.
Thank you for allowing your husband, your father, to serve in the way he did. I'll forever be impacted by the very short time I had with him. We sat down on one occasion, and he immediately and easily spoke of his love for his family. And that stuck with me. And so thank you to Leah and his children. You know, your father, your husband's sacrifice will never be forgotten, and we are all grateful.
Thank you so much.
We also caught up with Boulder Police Chief Mary Hurl. She mentioned the importance of the ceremony, that it was intended to solidify the family's commitment and their sacrifices as well.
Officer, I am with KGNU Community Radio.
Sure.
What's the importance of this event today?
I think because we promised their families and friends that we will never forget their sacrifice, and I think it's so important that Boulder starts this important ceremony and memorial to really solidify the family's commitment and their sacrifice as well.
Thank you so much. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
On today's Metro Show at 3 p.m., host Miriam Schiff interviews Bryce Springfield, who, despite severe challenges, is attending Princeton on a full scholarship. Here's a preview of that upcoming conversation.
You experience much in life that may have impact and or shaken one's resilience and perseverance. Bryce, share with us what those were for you, and how are you able to continue to hold on to your resilience and perseverance?
Well, for much of my life, my household has had unstable housing, employment, healthcare coverage, and so on. So we've had a lot of serious obstacles placed in our way. Particularly since the Great Recession, it's been difficult to have the proper environment to focus on studying or to be involved in my community. For example, for much of my freshman year, my mother and I were forced to live in homeless shelters before we were able to acquire secure housing. And we've also moved several times between cities, from Dallas to Waco to Austin to Phoenix, before finally coming to St. Petersburg, Florida for employment opportunities. So these types of things have really made it difficult, and these obstacles have been mentally draining at times, but ultimately, I've not given up my goal of advancing my education and reaching a point where I can give back to the people who have helped me through high school and earlier on. I know the importance of getting into a career that helps others that I also enjoy, and being given the opportunity to go to the best university in the country on a full ride scholarship has really opened a lot of doors for me.
Tune in to learn more at 3 p.m. today on KGNU's Metro Show with Miriam Schiff. Thank you for joining us on today's Monday Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine.